Hi, this is Robert Scheer with another edition of Scheer Intelligence, where the intelligence comes from my guests, in this case, Lewis Wallace, a journalist from Marketplace, young, 31 by my standard, and, oh, 32, I'm sorry, and who had did really interesting work in a number of outlets, particularly for Marketplace, and was a highly regarded reporter on business affairs. And then ran into some difficulty, not over any reporting that was done, but over a very frank column raising the question of what is objective journalism in this time of Donald Trump, what do we mean by neutrality, and so forth, and ended up being fired from Marketplace. And I just want to say, when I read the column again, I had read it earlier, I don't understand what the whole debate is about. I mean, it just seems to me your problem or crime or error was taking what is, as you point out, a debate going on in every newsroom in America and letting the public in on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think conversations have been going on not just around Donald Trump, but really for decades about what is objectivity and what is neutrality, and are those the right framework for newsrooms to use. And there's certainly been a shift in recent years towards a preference for the idea of transparency as opposed to sort of this claim that we're all neutral or unbiased. And one of the reasons why that perspective felt so important to me is because of sort of my clarity in this political moment that there are certain issues that I know I can't be neutral on because they affect me or my community directly. And I think I'm not alone in that. You know, I'm transgender. An example of an issue I don't feel that I can be particularly neutral on is whether or not transgender people should have safe access to bathrooms or have a right to kind of move through public space or be employed without discrimination, you know, those sorts of things, which of course are very hot issues right now in the national media. But I think that the same sort of thinking and logic applies to any of us, that our identities shape how we see things, shape our biases and our opinions, and that for all of us, there's a certain point where we draw a line and say, you know, this isn't something that I can sort of inherently be on the sidelines of. Does that create difficult, complicated questions for journalists? I think it should for all of us. But are any of us outside of that on the basis of who we are? I don't think so. So that was kind of what I was getting at. And then the urgency of this moment felt to me like one of the things that's under attack politically is free speech itself. And so there's a question of what are journalists as journalists going to do to stand up to those attacks, and are we going to be neutral on the sidelines in that debate?
We in the media always are calling for transparency on the part of governments and on the part of banks, on the part of everyone. Be transparent. Tell us what you're doing. Yet we don't really like a rigorous investigation or debate of how we make decisions. And wasn't that really the wedge here? You went public with the discussion that lots of folks are having about, you know, what is, where is the center politically? What is objectivity? How do you cover an administration that seems to stretch standards of the truth? And I think if Marketplace were honest about it, they would say, we don't want to take that discussion public because we want our journalists to appear to be robotic almost in their pursuit of news.
I love the idea personally of a media, and in particular because I had been in public media for several years, of a public media that trusts its audience and trusts its audiences in a way that says, you know, we know that you're intelligent and we know that you think about these things too, that you wonder sort of what our biases are and what goes into newsroom decisions. And certainly not every audience member is interested in that. I mean, a lot of people just want to get the newscast. They want to get the news. You know, they want the service that we provide. But some sliver of our audiences, I think, are kind of fascinated by who are we, where are we coming from, and how are we handling these difficult editorial decisions kind of behind closed doors. And so the idea that I love is kind of the pursuit of transparency and of really kind of involving our audiences in that process. And I certainly think the internet has opened up a lot of new opportunities, new ways for journalists to connect with our audiences, for them to get to know us better as people and know sort of more about our perspectives. And that's why I had a blog on Medium, and that was in a lot of ways the purpose behind the blog, was to bring a little bit more of a behind the scenes kind of perspective on journalism.
Let me just cut to Marketplace statement that they issued to Amy Goodman. They said, "We are committed to raising the economic intelligence of all Americans. We accomplish that with independent and objective reporting that is based on facts, pursue the truth, and covers what is happening in a fair and neutral way. Our team is a diverse group of professionals who have committed to that code of ethics," and so forth. Well, I went back and looked at your reporting, and I couldn't find anything that was close to even a gray area of not fairly reporting what people said and what the issue was. In fact, one article I found offensive only because you adhered to a notion of objectivity that seemed to me blurred a bit and wasn't about transgender. It was about Israeli settlements. And it was the economics of Israeli settlements. And you were treating Netanyahu's expansionist position as, you know, somewhat reasonable because from their point of view, housing is cheaper, so people find it a good deal and so forth. And I looked at this article and I said, but wait a minute, you've got these people, the Palestinian people, that have been kept without their basic freedoms for half a century. And this was land that everybody assumed would be part of a future two-state solution. And these other people are moving in there because they say it's a good deal. They can get land cheap. And that's somehow being reported as if, that makes sense. So I do want to push this question of what is objective reporting and tie it to this word transparency. I feel rather strongly about it because when I worked at the LA Times, I had come from Ramparts magazine, which was more of an adversarial investigative journal. And when I got in there, I was very uncomfortable never being able to use the first person. Even if I was writing about something I knew about, like visiting the Bronx where I'd grown up or something. And I felt there was a bit of dishonesty about not being able at times to inject yourself the way you could in magazine journalism. And then I remember just the second or third day there going across the street to the Redwood Bar where the Times reporters all hung out. And it was very clear within an hour of conversation in the bar that everyone had strong opinions about everything. And I'm sure you have found that in your career. I mean, journalists are not lacking in strong opinions. And so what happened in your case is it seems certain opinions were considered beyond the pale to intrude. And whereas, if you had raised the question of, well, we believe in the free market and we care about that decision making, that wouldn't have been thought to be reprehensible, right?
Yeah, I think that's about right. The free market is such a good example of sort of one of those assumptions that goes on in a lot of mainstream business journalism newsrooms, that would be something that you would sort of implicitly support or not implicitly criticize in your work. And I think you're right in terms of my work that it had been very careful and very largely, I would say, very fair. I'd never had a source reach out to me and say that they were misrepresented in any way in a story ever. I've done hundreds of news stories, often for audiences of millions when I was working for a marketplace. And so I feel very strongly that it's possible to come from a particular perspective and to kind of bring our own approach to things, which is inherently not a neutral approach, but still do work that is fair and is truthful. I think covering Israel and Palestine, covering the Israeli occupation, is such a good example of an area where different people have very different ideas of what constitutes a fair representation. And I remember that story that you brought up. I remember doing it, and I'd actually done only maybe one other story that pertained to Israel or Palestine at all. And I'm not a very well-informed person. And I remember on that issue, and I remember being very nervous about kind of painting it the right way. But there's a fine line between painting it the right way and painting it down a perceived sort of middle line that may actually be very troubling to some people. And I've certainly seen that same sort of phenomenon play out around coverage of trans issues, where for a long time, sort of the middle line around trans people was an idea that we were essentially people with mental illnesses who, if we needed anything, what we needed was, you know, kind of help, but that it was sort of routine and normal for us to experience abuse because we were messed up people. And then that has sort of changed. You know, I think the center line on that has changed in the United States more recently, but there's a lot of coverage that where I think people probably thought they were being fair, but they weren't necessarily.
Clearly, this is the issue of the moment. Something has happened in America. There's a lot of questioning about where we get our news. It should have always been questioned. There are always a lot of issues of why we went to war over weapons of mass destruction or what was the Gulf of Tonkin incident in Vietnam, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, this is an educational moment. And it would seem to me that your column should be, you know, a part of a standard reader on thinking about the media. And did it go any further than that letter to Amy Goodman from Marketplace? Have they said anything more about it? Are you suing? Is there an issue?
No. Marketplace is several public statements to different media outlets are kind of all that I've seen in terms of, you know, any official follow-up from the company, from American Public Media.
And that's it? I mean, for example, this statement about, for Marketplace, it is very clear, we are committed to raising the economic intelligence of all Americans. Wonderful. But what does it mean? And if you question, what is economic, should they know that, for instance, we don't live in a, we have crony capitalism, we don't live in a free market, there are real issues of the power that five banks have, the political power of Wall Street, is that part of the intelligence that they need to have? Those are subjects for debate. I know you're a very big defender of Marketplace, and I listen to the show, so I obviously think there's a good content there, but they beg all the questions. We accomplish that with independent and objective reporting that is based on facts, pursues the truth. Well, did you really cover what the housing meltdown did say to poor people? Did you really cover in any serious way what the Federal Reserve of St. Louis said, that black and brown people lost 70% of their wealth because of this? I mean, there are different ways. You could look at the bailout, for instance. What does it mean to have intelligence about the bailout? Who were the victims? The statement itself I found offensive because it denied that there is really a thing to debate here when there is a lot to debate.
Yeah, and I think so many of us who are journalists do get into it because of a sense of purpose, right? And some sense of values that drive us. So, you know, what makes a story is often about an injustice or a perceived injustice. And of course, what's perceived as an injustice in sort of the mainstream changes over time. And so in some instances, I think it's very much called for journalists to sort of be vanguards and be people who are the first to call something an injustice that maybe others wouldn't see that way. And so, of course, that's not a neutral process. You know, the process of which questions do we ask, which stories do we tell is completely driven by our values and our experiences and hopefully a drive as well for truth and for fairness. But that had been my experience as a journalist, is that I was always kind of, in some sense, pushing for something. And in my case, the thing that I think I've pushed for the most is centering the voices of marginalized people, marginalized communities, and, you know, not forgetting that with every business story, every financial crisis story, every housing story, that, yeah, there are workers, there are tenants, there are people being displaced, and often those voices appear, again, as sort of tokens rather than as experts on their own lives. And I was and am really passionate about putting people who have been oppressed or marginalized in some way at the center of stories as experts on their own lives. And that's an agenda. It's an agenda that some might disagree with. But I know that I'm not alone as a journalist in kind of pursuing truth for a reason and because of a set of values. And I will say, too, that I've heard from journalists from around the country and other parts of the world since this all happened, saying, you know, thank you so much, and I'm thinking about all of this all the time, too, and that a lot of newsrooms have been having these discussions and, you know, talking about my blog, talking about their policies, all of these things, which is, that was the reason that I decided to be public about it, was to encourage those conversations.
Yeah, but thank you very much for your sticking your neck out. And meanwhile, most of the people in our profession are ducking for cover because these jobs are hard to come by and it's an insecure industry. Let me just take a break for stations that want to identify themselves, and then we'll be back. I'm back again to continue the interview with Lewis Wallace, who was fired from Marketplace after writing a blog post about the question of objectivity, which, frankly, I found very difficult to object to. It just simply raised the question that is obvious now. What does the media do when it feels it's up against a situation where the truth is being deliberately mangled? Let me ask you about Marketplace, because what it seems to me that you did was puncture the aura about, well, maybe public radio in general, maybe news in general, that we're all just, you know, readers. We're all of the news. We're just all robots or something. And one of the things that has offended me about Marketplace is the, oh, let's do the numbers, you know. And the numbers just seem, oh, the good number is the market went up and the bad number is the market went down. It's rarely mentioned that most Americans don't benefit when the market goes up or goes down because they're not in the market, and that the market going up or down may not improve their situation of paying their rent or their mortgage or getting a job or something of that sort. And there is a kind of, and then at the end you get these sponsors, right? The well-intentioned organizations, sometimes the profit-making organizations that are sponsors. So let me just ask you, whether isn't there an illusion that is put out here on public radio stations in general, and not just a program like Marketplace?
Well, I think public radio at its best, and what I had loved about being part of public radio, is brings programming that kind of punctures and goes through to the other side of some of the questions you just raised, right? So, like, some of the stories that I did for Marketplace about housing got at that exact thing, that, you know, real estate values or real estate investment stocks may go up, but that's not necessarily to the benefit of people in the very places that had been devastated by the housing crisis. I reported several stories from Detroit about that, about how local residents had gone from losing their homes to being unable to afford to buy a home, as Detroit was kind of quote-unquote turned around. So that's just one example of, you know, questions that we can ask that I think do kind of undercut conventional beliefs about sort of who benefits and what is good news and what is bad news. But certainly public media has also been a participant in kind of upholding the status quo a lot of the time. And I think there's a certain amount of fear kind of in throughout that system overall about, I wouldn't say necessarily about sort of the donors or, you know, the corporate underwriters, but a fear about not being perceived as neutral. And I think that we always have to keep asking who dictates sort of where that perception comes from, because a lot of marginalized people are sort of never have the privilege to be perceived as neutral. So neutrality in a way is a reflection of privilege. And I think all media organizations would do well, especially at this time, to really kind of deeply question that framework and have those conversations and have them honestly in a way that interacts with their audiences and kind of trusts audiences, listeners, readers to actually participate in the process of changing journalistic ethics for the 21st century.
Yeah, and let me just make a point about the center, again, which came up in your article, not to conflate the issue of transgender and the issue of being gay, but on both issues, the center position was, as you mentioned before, this was a medical illness to be treated, and that was the benign position. You know, the others were, you were a fiend, you should be arrested, you should be killed, and so forth, you know, and people think this is ancient history, but it goes to this question of whether people should stay in the closet of their ideas, because I remember when the AIDS crisis broke, I was working at the LA Times, and I covered part of that, and we had some people in our building who, you know, were gay and would admit that to their friends, but they were not pushing on this story because they would be thought to be losing their objectivity. So people mm-hmm. were dying in the community for lack of attention, lack of proper medical care, lack of proper research, lack of proper information about what was going on. And a president of the United States was enforcing, that attitude. And even people in the building at the LA Times who knew better were silent. And yet here you are actually being punished for having dared to say, you know, things have changed in America, and they change in a way that makes you, a transgender person, uncomfortable. As far as I can see, the only thing you did wrong was letting the rest of us out there in the public in on a debate that is not only happening, but should be happening on even a broader level, not only in newsrooms, but publicly. What do we mean mm-hmm. by objective news coverage? What do we mean by fact-based? You know, Donald Trump is not the first person to talk about fake news. You know, people have often talked about fake news, meaning news they don't want to hear, inconvenient truths. And when you talked about climate change, you know, that's why Al Gore had the whole title of his thing, you know, it was inconvenient. And a lot of people dismissed the warnings about climate change as fake news. And people dismissed the warnings about, you know, maybe there aren't weapons of mass destruction in Iraq that the New York Times was reporting as a centrist position. Maybe that's fake news. So this is not something new. And it seems to me that it would be healthy to have a serious discussion about the issues you raise rather than what Marketplace did, which is basically suppress it and fire you.
Yeah, and I think that those, you know, that who dictates what is considered kind of center and what is considered, you know, fake news or propaganda is almost always about power, right? Like you mentioned the 80s and the AIDS crisis unfolding, and gay people at that time had so little political power, you know, that it was legitimately dangerous to people's jobs, to people's family lives, all of that, to speak out. And so the whole discussion was framed based on a power structure that really had no representation of that community. And people had to fight to change that and fight really, really hard. And, you know, I've had kind of a parallel, different but parallel experience with being transgender, coming out pretty young when I was in my teens in the year 2000, at a time when there was no, I mean, I think like, you know, Ellen DeGeneres had come out on TV by then or something, but there was like very little gay stuff in the media, let alone transgender people being in any sort of position of power or leadership. And there are still very few transgender people in positions of power or leadership or doing journalism at the national level or any of that. You know, we're a super underrepresented group, but that has changed over time. And so for me, this question of who gets to decide who is neutral has always been kind of an emperor has no clothes situation. Like, I'm looking at it and I'm like, okay, it's obvious to me that that's not some sort of inherently fair process. It's a process that's about power, and that's always been a fight. And that affects things like, you know, for me and a lot of other people, like our day-to-day working conditions, you know, whether you feel safe going into a situation, whether you can use a bathroom, whether people are referring to you appropriately, you know, by the correct name or pronouns, things like that are really basic, that for others are just sort of an assumption. But for me, it's like an everyday, you know, part of my job. And that I'm not saying that makes me some kind of special snowflake, but it certainly affects my perspective on things.
Well, and your life is at stake. I mean, as you point out, these are not insignificant issues to a transgendered person. People are killed for being transgendered as well as being denied public facilities. They're bullied. I mean, this is probably one of the most oppressed groups we have in the society. And it would be stupid to say you're in favor of diversity, but when people come in from a diverse background and say, wait a minute, something terrible is going on and concerns the group that I happen to be part of, what did you want me here for, wallpaper? I mean, you know, I just don't get it, frankly. You know, the vast majority of people working in the news media remain white, male, Christian, you know, believers in monopoly capitalism, et cetera, you know. So there's no danger of the transgendered people taking over journalism. It's not going to—
Although that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, but well, it would raise a lot of very interesting questions about, you know, masculinity and everything else. But the fact that matter is that this is it's like the undocumented issue. It's a crisis without a cause, except politically. It's a mm-hmm. way, and I just want to bring it back to public radio, which is, after all, this podcast is, you know, done with the support of KCRW, a good public radio station, is carried by other NPR stations. But I wonder whether at a moment when public radio, public television, and I had Judy Woodruff on a couple of weeks ago for this kind of discussion, and she was quite alarmed at the current situation, when that independent voice of public radio and television is more needed than ever. The listeners are more responsive than ever. They're more supportive of these stations now than ever. And yet you get the sense of a timidity. Because after all, there is still an element of public funding, and Congress can still hurt these stations, and so can the FCC, et cetera. And I wonder whether that isn't really the big story, the lead that we have buried here, which is that the folks that fired you are running scared, and they worry now that this president and this Congress could punish them. And maybe we're giving them too much credit to just say they're a little bit confused, or they missed the point, or they didn't really read your posting. No, maybe they just chickened out and caved.
The people who made the decision to fire me are, I think, very intelligent people who understood everything that I said. So I think where you're going with that is one possibility, certainly. And I think my life experience tells me, you know, when you're scared, when who you are, what you do is under attack, that timidity is not the answer. You know, that standing up is pretty much always the way to go. And so that's what I bring to kind of being a journalist. I think it's part of what makes me a good journalist. And I'm excited about working with other journalists who see it the same way. And I think many of the people that I've worked with in public media are extremely courageous people who kind of understand that principle. But I do think that there's, yeah, in this political environment, some groups, organizations, institutions are under attack that haven't been before, and they might not be used to it. And yes, there might be a timidity or a fear really driving people. And my feeling on fear as a motivator is that we really don't have time for that.
My takeaway from this is that people who care about an independent public radio and television have to defend it, and that's the listeners. And they have to say, you know, we're going to defend these stations no matter what Congress or the president or anyone else does to try to hurt them. We want independent voices, and we won't look the other way. And to my mind, your case is one of those great teaching moments. If anybody goes and looks at your work, which is available online, looks at your reporting from Detroit, which you mentioned, which I thought was very strong. I familiarized myself with your work, you know, before we did this broadcast. If they look at what you contributed to public radio and the idea you were fired for writing an inherently honest, important piece about where we are and where does that put journalists, if we can't have that discussion, if we don't want free people. We've already let the enemy of a free press win. If people who dare say what you said, which was certainly not far out at all, and by any stretch of the imagination, if that is not acceptable, you know, then the people who want to destroy a free media have already won the day. And I'm not going to ask you whether you agree with that or not, because you've got enough trouble defending your own position. You don't have to defend mine, but I want to thank you for doing this. And that's it for this edition of Sheer Intelligence, where the intelligence came from our guest, Lewis Wallace, recently of Marketplace. Our engineers are Mario Diaz and Kat Yore, with a big assist from Paul Ruest at Argo Studio in New York. And our producers are Joshua Shear and Rebecca Mooney. See you next week with another edition of Sheer Intelligence.